Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Jay, where are you at?
I'm in my basement. Where are you at?
I'm fine, thank you. This little expression we have here in New Orleans, it kind of means, how are you doing?
Oh, yeah, you catch me with it every time.
Not every time.
Yeah.
So here we are, talking to one another again, having a nightcap together.
Exactly.
And this time we're being joined by none other than Jenny Beasley, now Jenny Reith.
Correct.
She's not on the line with us yet.
Right. She's holding out on us.
Yeah. So hopefully she will be joining us very, very shortly, and she'll just chime in.
Right.
On the other hand, I suppose it's possible that she's having some kind of technical difficulties. So who knows
yeah.
where this will lead. Are you having a nightcap, guy?
I am, actually. I'm having a Yukon Jack and Diet Coke.
Good God, you've gone back to Yukon Jack after all these years?
Yeah, well, you know, I went to this bachelor party two nights ago at a place called the Lumberjack, which is this really rustic log cabin bar that's out in the middle of the woods. I mean, it's literally out in the middle of nowhere near the western border of Montana. We had this bachelor party out there, and everybody was supposed to dress up as either an old-time strongman or a gay lumberjack or a wrestler. Somehow within all that context, it seemed appropriate to take a bottle of Yukon Jack up there because, you know, as it says right there on the label, Yukon Jack is a taste born of hoary nights when lonely men struggled to keep their fires lit and their cabins warm. I mean, it says that right there on the label, and that's pretty much exactly what we were doing, being hoary at a cold cabin. So,
well,
yeah. Unfortunately, nobody drank it. Everybody was drinking everything else.
Right now, if I recall correctly, Yukon Jack is a whiskey-flavored liqueur.
Yeah, basically so. I think that's
Is that pretty much the same idea as Southern Comfort, then?
Yeah, Southern Comfort I find more kind of cloying, a little bit too sweet, perhaps. Yukon Jack is a little bit more of a...
Hi.
Hello.
Hey.
I had to do one more little number, but I got in.
Oh, fantastic.
There you go.
They made you jump through hoops, huh? Well,
I can't really hear you that well.
You can't.
No, but I've been enjoying your previous shows.
Well, excellent.
Yeah.
Hi, Jenny. How's it going?
How's it going?
Swell. It's been like more than a decade since we've talked.
Yeah, 15? Well, no, not that long.
It would have been probably sometime around, you know, I left Bloomington in 97, and you were still there at that time, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember running into you here and there at events and whatnot. So.
Yeah, I think the last time I saw you was maybe 98 or something.
Oh, right, because I came back to town.
Yeah, and I think it was right when Bart and Christy were heading out for New Orleans.
Yep.
Well, that was 99, though.
Okay, 99.
Yeah.
There we go.
Here we go.
And I'm in Alabama now, so.
Yeah, yeah. So are you trying to pick up the accent down there, or
I'm trying not to.
Do people think you're a northerner?
They can definitely tell that I have a northern accent. But my kids might be getting it. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Speaking of kids, I just wanted to mention that if I suddenly seem to depart from this call, it will only be temporary. But,
okay.
We are trying a technique known as the Ferber method with our daughter. This is the third night.
Wow.
And, seems to be so far a pretty good success in terms of just, two nights ago she slept in her own crib for the first time in months and slept through the night for the first time in her entire life.
Wow.
Wow.
So that was
and is this
cool.
the third night in a row or just different nights?
Third night. No, it's the third night in a row.
Yeah.
Did it completely freak you out when you woke up in the morning and realized that you had slept through the night?
Not really. I was explaining to Jay earlier that I'm exhausted, and that's kind of paradoxical. The reason is that I'm just lying there in bed, you know, listening, trying to listen to hear her cry or whatever. And
yeah.
I can come, but I still lost a lot of sleep. And
it echoes night, in your mind.
Yeah, exactly.
Her voice echoes, yep.
Hopefully tonight I'll get some good night's sleep. But tonight she actually, the first night I should say, took her about an hour, a little less than an hour to get to sleep. Second
wow,
night,
that's not too bad.
Second night took her a little more than an hour. And then tonight took like 15 minutes.
Nice. That's great.
What was really strange, last night was kind of weird because she was very quiet for a long time and I was sure she was asleep. When I went in and looked at her, she wasn't asleep. She was standing up in her crib, silent, just quiet, right? And it really kind of freaked me out.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
But she'd just been standing there. Presumably, she'd been standing there silent, you know, for a long time. And you don't think of a toddler as having much patience to be quiet for a long period of time. But
well, she was thinking about something.
All alone in a room. No, it's weird. So.
She was plotting
but,
for escape.
I think that she and I and all of us will soon be sleeping quite a bit better. I think she already is sleeping better. But anyway.
That's great.
I think children deserve to have that experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the main thing
too.
Is most of us don't, I think, let our kids learn to fall asleep on their own. We kind of put them to sleep. But, of course, adults put themselves to sleep. And so the basic, I guess, theory here is that kids need to learn to fall asleep on their own.
Right. Yeah. I think that's essentially it. And, it seems like you hit certain points where those things suddenly become, it sounds like maybe you guys chose to make this decision and make this change at a fairly fortunate time because she's not resisting too terribly badly. Doesn't sound like, anyway.
You're right.
It sounds real smooth.
Yeah.
It's been pretty good. And 18 months, I think, is probably a good time to do this. I mean, a lot of people try to do it real early, and we did not. So.
Yeah.
I did it with Marlon when she was about... Bless you.
Excuse me.
When she was about one or maybe one and a half. So about the same age as Persephone.
Now, Jenny,
how old are your
you
kids now, Jenny?
Do what?
How old are your kids?
Oh, Marlon is 8, and Leroy turned 5 over the summer. So 5 and 8.
Right.
5.
And I have had the pleasure of hanging out with them a few times lately, especially when we evacuated a year ago, almost to the day, not quite,
yeah.
I guess a year and a week ago, we evacuated for Gustav, and we ended up visiting.
I thought you guys would have like a trailer hitched up to your car.
No, not quite. We evacuated and ended up staying with Jenny and Pam up there in Alabama, and that was pretty cool. But not something that I want to repeat anytime soon, not the evacuation part anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So far,
we've
so
been
good
in New Orleans a lot.
Yeah. In fact, you guys took the train down here, which is a great way to travel. But
yeah,
let me ask you
first
let me ask
podcast,
you a very serious question, Jenny. Yeah, that's right. The first podcast. Mm-hmm. Jenny, are you having a nightcap there?
I took advantage because you had called a quarter after 10, and I thought I would just have orange juice, but I already did have orange juice, so I went and got some whiskey.
So you ran to the store?
No, I went into the kitchen.
Oh, okay.
And actually, under the sink, We don't have a bar or anything, but I keep the booze under the kitchen sink.
That's a good time. The kids reach it there.
I meant to memorize what kind it is. It's Evan somebody's Kentucky Straight Bourbon, so.
Oh, Evan Williams?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, see? That's what I drink all the time.
I used to drink that all the time myself.
Yep. Oh, so you don't have to be a Kentuckian to drink it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But it helps.
We get Buffalo Trace usually, and we got something else recently that wasn't all that great, and then this stuff's pretty good.
Yeah.
I can just drink it with ice.
I think Evan Williams is perfectly drinkable.
Yeah.
I am having a kind of very basic and rudimentary Singapore Sling.
Yeah.
That sounds really fancy. Is it Chinese?
It was invented, Singapore. Singapore is an Asian country. And it was invented by one particular guy back in, I think, the early 1900s. And there's lots of different versions of the recipe that are out there. It's at the Raffles Hotel that it was invented. And it's one of the most famous cocktails in the world. So I finally got the ingredients to make one, and I was pretty excited about it. So it's gin and Benedictine and cherry brandy. And the cherry brandy was hard to find. I had to actually mail order it, believe it or not.
Wow.
And,
cherry, the cherry fruit?
Yeah, cherry brandy. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Actually,
wow.
And I'm not sure if it's cherry-flavored brandy or brandy actually made from cherries.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really not sure about that. But anyway, like I said, I had to mail order it, and it turns out you got a fine for any alcohol that's delivered that way. And
wow.
So their FedEx kept stopping by my house. And, of course, I was at work, you know, working my job so I can earn the money to pay for the damn stuff. And they couldn't leave it here. And so as fate would have it, just after I called up the company and bitched them out and then realized that it's really not their fault, it's the federal government, FedEx made one last attempt when I was home because of the freaking daycare decided that they were going to be closed on the Friday before Labor Day weekend. They could have a nice four-day weekend, and I didn't know about it until, you know, the last minute. So I had to take a day off of work, but the fortuitous result of that was that I was here to get my cherry brandy.
Yeah.
Wow.
You could have
anyway,
Robitussin, though.
I just want to tell you that this is a delicious drink, and I wish you were here to have some.
Wow, that would be nice.
Yeah.
So is it – wow. So it's got gin and brandy.
Yeah, and Benedictine. A lot of people forget the Benedictine, but you can't forget it.
Wow.
What is Benedictine, like cucumber flavored?
No, it's like a herbal liqueur, and I would describe it as kind of similar to like Drambuie, but better.
So is it pretty sweet?
Yeah, it's got a nice blend of flavors there. The cherry brandy is very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And I also put in some lemon juice. I think that sometimes Cointreau, I think, is part of the original recipe, really. And I don't have any Cointreau, so, you know.
Oh, okay.
Life. But these things are disputed by expert mixologists who work at much higher realms than I should ever attain.
Yeah. So have you seen these meat-infused vodkas that have been coming out?
Oh, yeah. In fact, there was an entire session at Tales of the Cocktail about the, carnivorous cocktails. And not just meat-flavored vodkas, but also all kinds of drinks that incorporate meat in some way or the other, like bacon and stuff. Unfortunately, I was not able to attend that session, but it sounded fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah,
how do they do it? Is it like juice that they put in, or?
I think like with most of those infusions, I assume it's probably the same deal where they're just like soaking bacon in vodka until the vodka tastes like the bacon, which sounds strangely intriguing to me, but I'm afraid that to actually taste it would be a real letdown.
Well, there's a bacon craze going on, I think, because a lot of restaurants are putting bacon on dessert and all kinds of
stuff. Bacon is phenomenally bad for you.
Yep.
There's a place here in Missoula that had a, I can't remember what else was in it, but I know that one of the ingredients was bacon in this ice cream that they made, and somebody told me it was the best ice cream they ever made.
Yeah, and I think they're putting it on cupcakes now, and it's just getting really out of hand.
I've got a little bacon story that I've got to share with you on that note. You know, at my place of employ, we do faculty development, and so we often cater. We have a lot of catered events, including occasionally breakfasts. And sometimes, even though my boss is a vegetarian, you'll see a large plate of bacon, you know, at these things. But a lot of people don't eat the bacon, and so we had a lot of leftover bacon.
Wow.
And we ended up throwing it out after it just sat around, you know, for a week or two. And I mentioned this to some of the guys that I used to drink coffee with in the morning. And they just looked at me like I was crazy and pointed out that that there's no point in ever throwing away bacon. That's ridiculous to throw away bacon.
You can put it in stuff.
Because it keeps forever. And, you know, if it gets a little mold on it, you can just scrape that right off. And I expressed surprise about this, and they regaled me with tales of, well, don't you know back when in cowboy days out in the old West, they would be riding with bacon in their saddlebags. And, you know, obviously they didn't have refrigeration and so forth. So they were just pointing out that it keeps very well. So the next time that we had a big leftover batch of bacon, I strapped it between two paper plates, and I took it down to those guys after a couple of days. And they started eating on it. I mean, this is a huge quantity of bacon. And they after a couple of days, one of my friends in particular was, I mean, he was eating it for breakfast and lunch every day, all this bacon. And I noticed that he started to get even more aggressive than usual, which is saying something, right? And then he had to take some sick days. The whole thing, the whole thing just kind of really creeps me out. And anyway, like I said, I actually have not been hanging out with those guys lately.
Yeah.
Wow. So meat makes people aggressive.
Yeah.
Plus, I've heard it's phenomenally bad for you. You know, just cured meats and smoked, what do you call it, processed meats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are just not that great for you.
Because of the additives.
But,
we've been putting ham.
You know, there are certain sacrifices one has to endure in order to live a well-lived life, and I think that one of the sacrifices is a shorter life for bacon.
Possibly. I've been, for some reason, I had a morbid interest in looking up cancer rates lately. Just broken down geographically, because, you know, there's a lot of speculation. You guys may have heard of Cancer Alley. Supposedly is this place in Louisiana that, not quite New Orleans, but close to it. And then people say that New Orleans is, you know, I mean, people here say it's so toxic. Everything is very toxic here. And so I was looking at cancer maps, and I noticed that, Louisiana and New Orleans don't score particularly well. But I was shocked to see, again and again, it seemed like Kentucky was coming up in these things. It was very close to the top of the list. And, Jay, since you're from Kentucky, I was wondering if you cared to speculate on what in the world is going on.
Well, there's a huge tobacco industry there, which probably has something to do with it.
There you go.
I don't know for sure that it's the number one crop there, but it's everywhere. And, you know, I remember, I don't know if they're still there, but I remember the huge tobacco warehouses in Lexington that just sprawled for like city blocks, you know, where, and they would have these sales every few, however many days, you know, where the farmers would bring in their tobacco. And anyway, so I suspect that, you know, the ingrained nature of tobacco culture there may have a good bit to do with it. And probably also just the fact that, I don't know, healthy eating is not a particularly, at least was not when I lived there. This is 20 years ago, of course. Was not highly regarded.
Right. Well, much like here in Louisiana. And
I think I remember that obesity rates in Kentucky were sky high as well, even compared to the rest of the U.S., where they're sky high.
And, of course, we've all lived in Indiana. And Indiana, I believe, was, you know, number three or something. One of the fattest places in the country.
I think Mississippi ranks number one, actually.
Yeah, that's what I've often found, is that when there's lists of things that are bad, Mississippi and Louisiana are usually duking it out for number one.
Yeah, and like education and, well, not number one in education, but.
Yeah, no, or the bottom of the list. Things that are, for things that are good, we're usually duking it out with Mississippi for the bottom of the list.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times, actually, in Louisiana, it seems like we're looking over at Mississippi and saying, well, at least we're not as bad, we don't have it as bad as they have it over there.
Right.
And sometimes they're doing the same for us, you know. And it really, I mean, it's just, it really gets to you after a while. And, of course, Jenny, I know you're living in Alabama now.
Right.
Which is not quite the same as Mississippi. But it's like a mirror image of Mississippi. If you look on a map, anyway, it looks like a mirror image. But I would imagine that just being that it's part of the South, that Alabama does tend to lag behind on certain indicators as well. And I just wonder if, I mean, I know you probably, as a librarian and so forth, you probably look at a lot of statistics and stuff from time to time.
Once in a while.
Does it get to you? Does it kind of bother you? I mean, does it kind of infect your psychology? It's like a we're suffering here.
Mississippi, it did more because I saw
because you used to live in Mississippi.
Yeah, for 3 years actually. That's the longest place I've lived as a married woman, and that was I guess it bothered me because it's a very rural state.
It's
and
true.
We were in Starkville, which the population is 20,000. And, but we lived in a college town. So that was, you know, that was nice, but you'd hear people driving to Atlanta for 5 hours or driving here to Tuscaloosa for a couple hours just to shop and stuff because it was so rural. So what alarmed me was that people were driving all over the place. Drive, and you can't walk anywhere. There's no sidewalks in the South. Like even, like maybe downtown, but my street doesn't have one. And the street that we lived in Starkville didn't have one. And that's what bothered me at most. We'd go on walks, and we'd be the only people out on a walk. Now, granted, it was really hot and uncomfortable, but we couldn't just sit around all day with young kids that need to move around because they would go crazy. They still go crazy because they're just real active.
Sure.
And maybe that's what bothers me the most, is people don't seem very active. And but what was I talking about? Oh, I just saw a lot of poverty in Mississippi. I was working at the public library, my first public library job, in a town of 60,000 in Columbus. And that was ironic to me because it was a hospital town back in the Civil War time. I didn't even know what that was, but it just meant that they weren't burning down all the houses because they were administering medical care to a lot of soldiers. And so there's a lot of all these big old mansions, but yet everyone I saw during the day in the library was unemployed, you know, people that couldn't find jobs or just weren't educated. So that's just what I saw a lot of, was poverty and people that didn't walk. Well, of course, the people that didn't have cars were walking, but there weren't any sidewalks. But what else? What I'm hearing about Tuscaloosa is, and there's a steel plant here and there's a paper factory. What I'm hearing is that there's a lot of airborne carcinogens. And we all got, like, respiratory failure once we moved here. So maybe that's why people are fat. They can't run because their lungs are just filled up with all kinds of stuff. But I don't know. It's different here in the South. But then up, I like how people are very social and a lot more outgoing. So
yeah.
It's kind of a trade-off, I guess.
Well, when you talk about long distances and having to, you know, drive to do your shopping or whatever, that makes me think of you know, being out west. I'm sure that Jay can relate to that phenomenon, although I've never
been out. Well, yes and no, because actually Missoula is a, I mean, you know, the people in the bicycling community, which is pretty active here, might say that it's not a very bicycle-friendly town or pedestrian-friendly town, but I think that those are largely people who don't realize how much of the rest of the world is like what you're talking about or what you blogged about in Tennessee, Bart, even being able to, not having sidewalks or not having bike lanes at all and being scared to death to get out and do that kind of thing. You know, Missoula is actually home to Adventure Cycling, which is this nonprofit organization that does a lot of, they publish a lot of maps for cyclists around the country. And one of the Matt, my cousin, who I followed out here, rode his bicycle from Lexington, Kentucky to Missoula following one of their maps. So, you know, it's actually within the town, you know, we've got pretty much everything that we could want. Well, I shouldn't say that. I mean, I'd love to have an IKEA, for example. But you can get your basic, you know, all your basic needs within walking or bicycling distance of pretty much anywhere in the downtown and surrounding area. The trouble is, you know, if you want to get well, you just get accustomed to driving a lot longer distances for things out here. I mean, I remember it was a real special occasion that I sort of dreaded in a way to drive from Bloomington to Lexington, my hometown, which was 3.5 hours. And I've literally driven 3 hours at least just to fish a particular river here, you know, and drive back in the same day. People just, you know, distance kind of comes with the territory, literally.
Right. That's what I've heard. And, of course, I'm living in, first of all, I'm living much further south than either of you guys, but I'm also living in the biggest city of all three, and I literally don't tend to leave the city for, you know, sometimes years at a time. It actually kind of freaked me out after Katrina, when we came back and just had a lot of, you know, work to do, and we were kind of knuckling down and doing that stuff on rebuilding our house and rebuilding our lives. And when I actually did have a chance to or had a reason to leave the city after a few years, it dawned on me I literally not left the city or, you know, the city next door, the suburb, in years. And it's kind of strange.
I think that happens
more
with cities.
Yeah, it does. Does absolutely, because you meet people in big cities who often don't leave their neighborhood.
Yeah.
I mean, for decades. Who grow up in one neighborhood and just kind of stay there. And which is not always a great thing.
I was surprised when I went to San Francisco, people were just familiar with their block, basically.
Yeah.
And I had my little tour book, and I said, "Well, can we go here?" And they, people weren't really interested in stretching their horizons.
Mm-hmm.
But that's interesting.
Mm.
So I wonder what New Yorkers do. They just stay in New York.
Oh well, definitely. That's what I think of when I think of people who grow up in a certain neighborhood and just never even leave that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
I think of New York, but that's just because it's such a famous city and you hear so many stories from there. I'm sure it's true in lots of urban areas.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a lot going on in New Orleans, though.
Oh, yeah.
There's
a lot cultural,
Yeah.
The cultural life is pretty it's pretty rich here. If you can manage to, get out of the house and enjoy some of it. having a toddler does kind of, cramp your style a little bit. But there are actually a number of, things that are organized around town for kids and so forth, and a lot of stuff regarding music especially. But it's all, it's just also very strange.
New Orleans?
I think it's interesting that you say that people in big cities tend not to leave. It surprised me when my brother moved to Austin, Texas.
When did he move there?
It was probably about, I'm thinking 2000, 2001.
Oh, okay.
Could have been a little bit later. I don't think that they get out of town nearly as much as I do, but then I guess, in a town like that, why would you necessarily need to get out of town unless you're going to visit somebody in a distant place? Because you've got, there are great parks that are big urban parks that feel like you're out in the middle of nowhere, even though you're not. And
does he ride or do anything like that there?
No, he lives in kind of a suburban area, so he's pretty auto-centric, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I know that he has a bicycle, but last I heard, he hadn't really ridden it. So.
Well, you guys both know, I'm sure that a huge part of my identity over the last 9 years or so has just been riding my bike to work every day. I felt like it's just a fantastically enjoyable way of getting to work, and it's just been great for us to only have to have one car, because a car ain't nothing but a heartache and a pain in the freaking ass. It's nice to only have one to worry about instead of two, in my mind. But aside from that, like I said, it's just the pleasure of, getting on the bike and riding to work. So much nicer.
So much more.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just more relaxing and so forth. And so I really enjoy that. But it's also fallen upon me to, take our daughter to daycare each morning, and now also to pick her up afterwards. Because Christy's working an extended school day.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's just, it's just not going to work, for her to do that, at least not in this.
Is the extended day like a separate program, or is
no,
going on longer?
just a long school day. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
So it ends up being effectively with from the time she leaves to the time she gets home, it's almost a 10-hour day. And that just kind of sucks, of course. But my point is that I'm not sure that we're going to be able to continue. I'm going to be able to continue to enjoy that. We just may have to become a two-car family. I hope that's not the case, but right now we're looking at to buy another house, and the way we bought the house we're in now was predicated on the idea of I want to be able to walk to work, or ride my bike most days. But if I have to walk, I want to be able to walk, and so we just kind of drew a circle on the map around where I work, and let's buy a house in that circle. And as we're buying a new house, I was kind of thinking along the same lines. But if this doesn't work out, then we may have to reconsider. And that would kind of
suck.
So if you're far, would you want to keep her in the same daycare? Or?
Well, actually, we're planning to change daycare. I thought we were going to change this month, but it looks like it's going to be next month. Because there's a place just a few blocks away from, right now, my daily routine is every morning I strap her to my chest on one of those baby carriers, baby Bjorn, and I walk four blocks to the daycare, drop her off, and then come back to the house. Usually I have to chill for a few minutes and wipe the sweat off because, of course, we are in a subtropical climate, and it's pretty hot.
Mm-hmm.
Then I collect myself and get on my bike and ride to work. I'm thinking of streamlining that process, by the way. And if I could just get a child seat mounted on my bicycle,
mm-hmm.
so then I could ride my bike to the daycare, drop her off, and just head on to work. And that would streamline the whole process.
Yeah.
But
there you go.
Yeah, that remains to be seen. The thing is that there's a daycare just a few blocks further up the street that offers meal service and a number of other advantages, and is same price. So, yeah, we're thinking of moving her there. Although we like the place that we've been, and we've really felt the love. She's getting older, and the love is diminishing.
Wow.
Yeah.
She needs to find other avenues.
Yeah. So, after Katrina, as we were doing all this planning and all this neighborhood work and so forth,
mm-hmm.
there was this one church in particular, an Episcopal church here in my neighborhood, that really opened itself up to the community and still is very open to the community and so forth. And I really respect that. And that's where this other daycare is located. And to tell you the truth, I really feel, in fact, I even have it on my key ring now, a key to this church. Get in at any hours. I could go over there right now and go in there. Although that'd be kind of strange because it is late at night. And
how did you end up with a key to the church?
They gave me a key because I go to meetings there all the time. I'm the president of a nonprofit organization that meets there once a month. And, the issue, it's great that they open their space to us, but the issues of access do require some finagling, and it ends up being just easier to give me a key than to have somebody have to let me in or let us out and so forth. So, all that to say that it's a pretty cool church, and my personal state of, evolution of thinking about spirituality and religion and so forth is such that I actually feel very close to this church now. And I really don't mind the idea of taking my girl there to have not only her daycare there, but I guess they'll take him in the chapel occasionally and I don't know what they do, but they say it's supposedly it's not religious education, but it's something geared to kids.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably all for the best. So.
Nice. And so are there, how's the house hunting going?
Oh, yeah, that is so very complicated.
Isn't that yucky?
In some respects,
yeah.
I don't think yucky is the first word that I would have chosen, but I know what you mean.
I would love to be house hunting right now, but...
Sure, it's kind of exciting at the same time.
Just from your blog, it sounds like there's a lot of different things you have to think about.
Oh, fuck yeah. It's yucky and exciting at the same time. So... we're in the inspection phase right now in this house that we made an offer on. You know, we made an offer. They made a counteroffer. We accepted the counteroffer. We're in the inspection phase. And so I've had a termite guy come and, you know, crawl under the house and look throughout the house and so forth. And then I had, I guess, structural engineer guy come and look at, really it was a whole house inspection, but mainly structural. And on top of that, then just today, we had a guy who does lead inspections, looking for lead-based paint and just lead issues to our house that we're currently living in and the house that we're looking at buying. And then we also had a roofer come out and make estimates. It all adds up.
Bless you.
To a whole complicated picture, but to put it in a nutshell, we found some serious issues with part of the roof and with stuff underneath the house, which is going to need to be addressed or remedied in some kind of way before we can really close the sale.
Did it sustain any Katrina damage or anything?
Oh, yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Seriously, it was seriously flooded, just like the house I'm in right now. And because it's not that far from here. Actually, it's about a 30-minute walk. Anyway, this house was completely gutted and renovated from top to bottom. And it's pretty nice in a lot of ways. But and the neighborhood's a smidge nicer than the one that we're in now.
And there's a nice yard.
And it's got a little bit of a yard. Yeah, it's got a tiny little yard. And, you know, more than we have now in terms of, like, actual grass and so forth. But I forget what the gist is. I was going to tell you the gist. But I can't remember what the gist is.
Counteroffer, the roof, something under the house. It's near your house now and...
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, either we end up moving there or we don't. But this is all predicated, of course, on the sale of our house, which has just gone on the market literally right now, this weekend, or this holiday weekend, this Labor Day weekend. We're putting it on the market. There's actually a sign out in front of the house
now. Oh, my goodness.
And,
I love your house.
So do I.
I love it very much.
But we're getting a St. Joseph statue to bury in the yard tomorrow on Labor Day. And
which part of the yard?
Well, it depends. You can bury it in the front or the back, and there's a different protocol for both scenarios. So
A flag. You have to do it a specific way. Like, you can't hang it
across
from an entrance or something like that. So,
right, there's a right way to hang a flag and there's a right way to bury the St. Joseph statue. If it's in the front yard, it's supposed to be, I believe, upside down and facing the house, facing away from the house. I forget. But anyway, I'll have to check that. And,
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You're not aware of this?
No.
Well, apparently... St. Joseph, you get a statue of St. Joseph, you bury him, and your house sells, and then you dig him back up, and then you put him in a place of honor in your new home.
Uh-huh.
How big is it?
makes perfect sense.
I don't know. I've got an authentic New Orleanian Catholic who has purchased this statue for us, taken it and gotten it blessed at some mass around here, and he's coming tomorrow for a midday feast wherein we will bury said statue.
Oh,
and yeah, exactly. So,
well, here's hoping that it's not life size, because that would take a while to dig the hole.
I'm pretty sure it's much smaller than that, but
like the size of the Statue of Liberty. You'd have to get like a big backhoe or something.
Well, yeah, larger than life. Yeah, that would be something.
Yeah.
What's especially interesting, of course, is that the soil, at least in the back of the house, is of course all in containers, but it's contaminated with lead. So
nice.
You know, would it be more auspicious to bury him in the front yard? Which, of course, by front yard, by yard, I mean only the space between the sidewalk and the curb. That's the only yard we have.
Hmm.
Well, yeah, you probably don't want to put it where there is lead.
I guess not.
Yeah.
There might be lead. There's probably lead everywhere. The front yard does have a pomegranate tree also growing there. So, you know, that's kind of our focus.
Persephone.
It's probably not your property, though, so does it really count?
Well, I believe it is kind of our property. At least we, in New Orleans, homeowners are expected to maintain and take responsibility for not only that space between the sidewalk and the curb, but the sidewalk itself. If it gets fucked up,
right,
or whatever, it's kind of on the homeowner to deal with that. Which,
right, but it's not. It's probably not yours. I mean, that's the way it is here anyway, is that, like, you can actually get fined for not taking care of the trees here, and yet they're not your trees because it's not your property. It's just sort of what comes with the, you know, your right to buy the property is predicated on your willingness to take care of the city's trees, which...
It's socialism.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder if it's in the state code books.
It's local here,
because
it's a zoning thing.
Hey, speaking of politics and so forth, how do you guys feel about the current state of the union, the political tenor of the times, if you will, especially this supposed debate or what have you on health care?
Someone bit someone's finger off or something? Like a tip of a finger?
Yeah, I heard about that.
But like who, like which kind of, I mean, did they have a fight and then someone got bit?
Yeah. No, a pro healthcare reform guy and an anti-healthcare reform guy got in a fight. And at one of these town halls, like I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the pro-reform guy bit the guy's finger off.
Pro-reform, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I heard that the anti-reform guy got excellent government-paid medical care because he's on Medicare.
He's protesting his own care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so just to put it in a nutshell, my personal take on this is informed by the year that I spent living in Sweden, when I was 18, 19, I had an ingrown toenail, and I went to the medical facility, and I guess it was a hospital or something. Anyway, I had it treated, and I went to go pay
in
for
Stockholm?
It. I was like, who? I was living in northern Sweden.
Okay.
And I went to go pay for it, and they there was no place to go pay for it because that just was not a part of the system. They just laughed.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, that's actually pretty cool. And it seemed to me that's what we should have, something where high quality medical care is just pretty much guaranteed for everybody. And of course, you'd expect that the rich would get even better care because, you know, they shell out the bucks and they get it. But the point is that high-quality medical care is there just as the base level for everybody. And I thought, you know, supposedly America as a rich nation, we should be able to afford that or do that somehow. And, of course, we don't. And I think that's a shame. But I've always just felt like, how can we get to what the Swedes have?
Yeah.
Well, it's really high-cost care, and I don't know where the high cost comes from, except for the way that it interacts with insurance. Because insurance pays for it. You know, they're supposed to pay for some of it, but I don't know. Insurance finagles a lot of stuff.
Yeah. And you also have not only insurance that the individual has to get to in order to get the healthcare, but also the insurance the doctors have to have for malpractice and so forth.
Right.
And I imagine that a lot of that is completely obviated by a system in which the individual doesn't have to have health care, and the doctor is essentially working for the state and therefore is, I would assume, immune to some litigation.
Well,
yeah, I don't know about that aspect of it.
Yeah, neither do I.
But it certainly seems like, I mean, you know, it unfortunately looks, in a realistic sense, like we're not going to get anywhere close to a Swedish-type system. You know, Max Baucus, who's our senator here in Montana, is the head of the Appropriations Committee, I think, in the Senate. Or the finance committee or something. And he, in any event, he's sort of the guy that seems to be heading up how the Senate legislation is written.
Yeah.
And he said just the other day that he doesn't even think that this public option idea is going to get through. And he's been very against that. He sucks the dick of the insurance industry and has for years. And it's unfortunate because, you know, there's an opportunity here for really substantive good change for our society. And it's fucking needed. I mean, just in the years that I've been at the Missoulian, you know, back in 2002 or whatever, when I started there, the insurance was not great, but it was okay. You know, like I paid for the best insurance package that they had, and you know, I would go to the doctor periodically for this or that, and things would get submitted, and every once in a while I'd have to make a phone call just to help usher something through the process. But generally speaking, everything worked like it was supposed to. This past year, we changed to the cheapest plan that they offer, the major medical only, because we had gotten completely sick of the fact that, you know, we had this program that was supposed to have, I mean, I think it was like a $500 deductible, and then after that, they would pay the vast majority of everything. Well, they wouldn't ever pay anything. I mean, and I'm not exaggerating. We had to call about every single medical bill that we received, you know, because it would go through the insurance and they would refuse to pay anything. And then we'd have to make the phone call and say, no, 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 no. You paid for this last time and you're going to pay for it again. Oh, well, we just need to recode this and okay, whatever, you know, but it meant that there was a hassle associated with every bill. And finally we were like, fuck it, you know, let's have the insurance just for if there's a true medical disaster and, you know, pay for everything else out of pocket. And when the system is that broken to where I'm not willing to spend the money that they're willing to take because I don't have the money, but because their service sucks so bad, something is seriously wrong with the insurance companies. I should say that as with my insurance company, except I hear that from everybody I talk to.
Ooh, it sucks.
Except for people who work for the government.
Yeah.
They seem to have it all right.
I had state worker in Mississippi, and it was totally bad, but I had a high deductible.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to urge some stuff through frequently, and I
yeah.
was getting self-pay letters from lab work, from Marlin. But it was, I get like little mild panic attacks when
mm-hmm.
I have to talk to any kind of, I mean, I had to call the mortgage company last week, but yeah, there's a lot of follow-up that has to happen, and I feel like I'm doing other people's jobs.
Exactly, yeah.
And my best insurance was when I was at University of Cincinnati. Actually, at IU was all right.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw those little EOBs, you know, the whatever
mm-hmm.
of benefits, explanation of benefits. I
yeah.
never saw those up north,
uh-huh.
ever. Like, so I never knew what I, you know, what people were paying for me.
Mm-hmm.
But once I got down south, it just went south. It's been terrible.
Yeah.
Well, Mississippi was really bad. Alabama's better.
Hmm.
But maybe like they should do something where it's more regulated for every state, because it's different for every state.
Yeah. Well,
but I don't
know
what needs to change, like how it's going to change.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that that the Republicans seem to be pushing really hard that I actually think would get us a really long way, I think it's actually a really good idea, is simply allowing competition choice across state lines for health insurance, and opening up, because currently, you know, you can get Blue Cross Blue Shield in Louisiana, Bart, and so can you, Jenny, and so can I,
mm-hmm.
but they're actually completely separate companies, and that's something that's a policy set by the federal government, and it
mm-hmm.
it serves to artificially limit the pool of people getting insurance from those companies, and therefore, you know, they have to keep the costs higher. And, you know, I think that something like that would improve things probably a good bit. I don't think it gets us the whole way. I mean, I guess my thing is, I don't care if it's a public system, you know, like what they have in Sweden, or a purely private system. I just think it just needs to work. And I think that
yeah.
that's sort of where a lot of people are these days, you know. And if somebody can please, you know, just get the public dialogue focused on that. But, you know, the problem right now, it seems, is that there's so much politics injected into this that anything that the Democrats come up with, the Republicans are going to say no just because the Democrats came up with it, and vice versa. And that's ridiculous.
And people are biting fingers.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, there's a big mm-hmm. knee-jerk mm-hmm. reaction to it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like Bart's having trouble with Humana, and that's who I had in Ohio, and I had no trouble there. So it's like even the same company gets
yeah.
to do different things, different places.
Yeah.
It's all in the law. It's legislation is what it is. I don't know. Actually, one of the professors that I work with, teaches healthcare law, so I pick his brains from time to time, but he tends to, actually he has good insight, but not the same perspective.
mm-hmm.
So, but it's interesting to learn more how it works. And
yeah.
I think with insurance, a lot of the problem is that people are using insurance to get stuff they don't need. And I think that's a lot of it, really. And a lot of it is like too much lab work, because I think people are trying to get away from malpractice, so they're referring out.
Right.
And they're doing all this diagnostic stuff that isn't necessarily necessary.
Yeah, there have been various studies on that that seem to say, I mean, it supposedly is only, you know, quote unquote, only adding somewhere in the neighborhood of less than 10%, somewhere between 2 to 7% to healthcare costs. But it's still, I mean, that's still significant when you're talking about the fact that, you know, just going to the doctor these days costs $100, and that's without them doing anything.
Right.
Well, I always felt that the very idea of health insurance as kind of a necessary precursor to getting any quality health care, preventative health care, it's just not workable. I like to say that I had epilepsy. I don't call myself epileptic anymore because I haven't had seizures really for over 10 years. So I seem to have outgrown the condition.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, I had seizures and it was pretty hairy. And when I was going from that period of kind of getting out from mom and dad and their health insurance provided through my father's corporate employer, and getting out on my own in the world, I found that I couldn't get insurance because I had a pre-existing condition.
Yeah.
This is not an example of somebody, you know, who lives, you know, it's not like a grasshopper versus the ant, you know, Aesop's fable. I'm talking about a young person who is just trying to get started in life, and you know, you're faced with this ridiculous quandary, and it's really very Kafkaesque, and it just doesn't make any sense. So I hear all this debate about a public option, but I really don't think that I just think that's indicative of how skewed the dialogue is, that public option seems so controversial, when really, you know, the even more substantive reform issues aren't even on the table, it seems like. I have in my possession, actually it's out there in the public domain, I believe, or at least publicly available, Ronald Reagan making a speech before he was president, before he was even governor of California, back when he was just an actor, so in I think the early 60s, where he is decrying the idea of medical, of healthcare reform, and talking about how this issue is the way that socialists and socialism can get a wedge into the American mindset. So you got to be aware of it.
Right.
And even before that, I mean, it goes back even further than that. This has been a constant controversy in the history of our country, a constant struggle. And frankly, it seems to me like the forces of good have lost out versus the forces of evil for many decades now, certainly or before any of us were born. And I know we need some kind of reform. I was kind of thinking that we might see some kind of actual beneficial reform under this new regime. And if that doesn't happen, I'll certainly be very disillusioned.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Jenny, what do you
think? We've been talking for an hour and 10 minutes.
Wow. What's the record so far?
I think that's it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of interesting topics, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I heard a duck quacking. Are either of you near a duck?
No.
I heard something quacking, but I think it was like a, you know, like a relay kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
The sound of our voices combined and echoed.
It was our messenger ducks.
Our ducks, yes. Exactly.
I do have a neighbor with ducks just down the street.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
And I didn't know that was legal. You know, it might be city ordinance not to have one. Well, actually, there's two ducks.
You never know. We're planning on having duck for lunch tomorrow.
Wow.
Nice.
All right, guys. Well,
a lot orange?
Just on the grill. Oranges involved. But it's been certainly a pleasure speaking with both of you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you for including me.
Absolutely.
All right. Well,
I'm glad I finally got to do it.
I am too. And thank you so very much for participating, Jenny.
Yeah.
Yep.
I will talk to both of you.
Good to hear your voice again.
Have fun. Yeah, good to hear your voice, Joe. And
all righty.
And have fun burying St. Joseph.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Not Joe, but St. Joseph.
Right.
Right on.
Right on. Bye-bye.
Good night.